These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and lived to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
Judd, I was not in the arena last night, but that was a religious experience watching that game on TV, the Wolves and the Warriors. First of all, like, even just regardless of the fact that the Wolves won that game, and it's a big win to stay a half game back, or whether it's a game or a half game back from number one, but the Warriors came in. It was a good litmus test because they came in. They're two games over 500, three games over 500. The Rockets have won eight in a row. They're already in playoff mode, desperately trying to stay in the play-in bracket. So you knew you were getting their best punch last night, and they came out swinging in the first quarter. So that was, I don't know, man, that was one of the more fun games of the season for the Timberwolves.
I tweeted this last night too. So this Wolves team is really damn good. Like, there's no debating that, okay? Is this the most confident, or I don't know what the word is, confident, cocky, that you felt about a Minnesota team since when? Because I went back to 2009 Vikings. 2019 Twins sort of took off, but I don't know that I was ever, like, it was a fun year, don't get me wrong. So I'm not trying
The Bomba Squad. The Bomba Squad was
that was a really fun year, but I don't know that I was ever like, oh my God, this team. Like, it's been very rare that I have felt, because I remember I felt this way misguidedly about the 92 Twins before the Eric Fox series against the A's at the Metrodome. But that team was deep, and that team was just damn good. The 2009 Vikings were legit. Like, once they got Favre, can you think of a more recent team that you felt the brash or cockiness that you feel about this Wolves team?
Boy, certainly the last Wolves team that I would put, just in terms of like watching this team and feeling a level of confidence that they're just going to find a way when they're down by 11 or 12 points or whatever it was in the second quarter against a dynasty that's at the tail end, but it's still like Steph Curry and Draymond and Klay coming in off the bench. And I'm at no point am I thinking, oh, they're going to get beat by 20.
Right.
Whereas other iterations of the Timberwolves and certainly other iterations of the Warriors, if the game starts the way that it did, you're like, well, this is going to get out of hand quickly. I was thinking, well, they're definitely going to come back and take the lead at some point. And then it's just a matter of what happens in that chess match in the fourth quarter. I don't even know if I felt that way about the 2003-04 Timberwolves. I was in college during that season. It was like a year before I started working in the actual Minneapolis media. So I wasn't like in the locker room or courtside or anything like that. But with that team, they were the number one team in the Western Conference. They went on the run late in the regular season, and they like emerged as the one seed toward the end. But the entire time you were watching that team, you were thinking about the San Antonio Spurs, who had won a couple championships. You're thinking about the Lakers, who had won three straight championships. That even if the Wolves are the number one seed, they've got like two dueling dynasties and Tim Duncan and Kobe and Shaq to sort of deal with. I don't feel that way about these Warriors anymore, or the Lakers. Like, those teams are literally battling for their lives to stay in the play-in. Now, the Nuggets are still the best team in the conference, and at the end of the day, like, a trip to the finals is going to run through Denver. But I think I would say that this is the most confident I have felt in the Minnesota Timberwolves in my life. And that includes 03-04 and Kevin Garnett, which is kind of crazy. And with the Twins, even that 2019 Bomba Squad, you knew in the back of your head, you're going to play the Yankees at some point.
Yes.
And I don't know, we've seen enough playoff failures.
Yes.
So it is weird, uncharted territory to be in when you are this confident in the Timberwolves down by 12 against the Warriors. Like, oh, they're coming back. 100% they're coming back.
Yes. And going into the fourth down, and like you were like, you know what? They'll be fine. So I've got five Wolves thoughts for you, my friend.
Wow. We're flipping this today.
Flipping it today. Of course, I don't think that you sit in front of your TV and just write down notes. I think you actually.
I do, but I do it on my notes app.
Right. No, exactly. I've got the same phone. I just like to write down notes. Okay. Thought number one. Bring on the Warriors, and I'll explain why. All right. Now, there's a lot of options here. The play-in, the Warriors might not even make it to the ultimate playoffs, but here's why I want them. First of all, it's going to be a dogfight. Like, the Warriors are down, but they ain't out. They're still They're still scrapping at your heel. They're still around your ankles, nipping away. But why I want this, and I say this probably more as a basketball fan, is it's my humble opinion that playoff runs feels like, especially in hockey and basketball, need to start by going through like an old champion, okay, if it's the Rockets, you're probably going to beat them. You might even sweep them. The Warriors, though, they know what a championship looks like. Klay Thompson has gone from being absolutely a shell of himself to playing pretty well again. I mean, last night...
He's got that bench role. Yeah.
Exactly right. Draymond might drive you crazy, but he still has some Draymond role. Steph Curry can't play as much as he once did, but he can knock down shots. Like, this team knows what a championship looks like. And last night, I was thinking, how satisfying and how much confidence would it give you to go through a team like this? And it might be 6 games. It might be 7. I don't know. But the point is, if you get through that team, which I like your odds, it really puts down a stamp of we're here and we ain't screwing around. Bring on the Warriors.
I've been saying that all year, and I feel like now I don't know if I want the Warriors necessarily, because they, credit to them, man. And this is, it's that heart of a champion where, yeah, they're not the same team that they were 5 years ago when Kevin Durant was there and they broke the NBA. Didn't they break? They broke the Bulls record, right? With 73 wins at one point in the regular season. I mean, we're not looking at that Warriors team, but
right,
it's the Undertaker sitting up every once in a while. Like, they can come in and they can perform at the level they need to. And they've been doing it a lot the last month and a half. And for them to just on the fly shake up their entire lineup, credit to Kuminga for becoming a go-to scorer and defender, energy guy. This Podziemski, too, who's become one of their key starting players, he was starting last night. And then they're bringing Chris Paul and Klay Thompson, two first ballot Hall of Famers, off the bench for 20 or 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So they've shuffled some things, and they've definitely put the puzzle together a bit differently. For a long time, I was saying this season, if the Wolves and the Warriors play in a playoff series, it'd be a 4-game sweep, maybe a 5-game. I think it's a 6-game series, maybe even 7. Like, if you get the last month version of the Warriors.
Yep.
And then, like, does Kat come back and how does he factor in? Because if he comes back, how is he going to integrate? But you also get the depth of Kat and Naz Reid, who was magnificent in the first half last night, keeping the Wolves within striking distance. But just from a fun factor standpoint, this would be a blast of a first-round matchup.
Yes.
So
yes.
I am with you. I am not as confident as I was a couple months ago because the Warriors have made some great tweaks. And this is the second time in franchise history the Wolves have swept the regular season series against this team. The other time, I believe, was 1998, 97-98.
They said in the broadcast last night. Yep, that's what they said.
Those kind of weird late 90s Warriors teams. But yeah, right now, as it stands in the Western Conference, the Wolves are a game back of the Nuggets. They're a half game back of the Thunder. So the Wolves are in the 3 slot. They would play the 6-seed Phoenix Suns in a 3-game series. If the Wolves could jump up in, because the Warriors, if they make it, are going to be a play-in team. They're 5.5 games back of the 6. There's almost no way they can climb up out of the play-in. So you would then, if the Wolves could get the 1 or the 2 seed, then depending on how the play-in shakes out, it's going to, oh man. I think it's the one. I think the Warriors would play the 1 seed, and the Wolves could still get the 1 seed. But
right.
I'm with you. It would be a super fun first round matchup.
As a fan, and I also think while it would be difficult, 2 things. One, the playoffs are like, you're not going to get a lot of, hey, we swept them in 4, and now we're really starting the playoffs in the second round. And the other thing is, I think the confidence that it would instill, and I think like Ant would love this, right? Steph
just dagger the dynasty for good, right?
Exactly right. But I mean, then you're off and running. So I think it would be, and Target Center would be rocking. I think it'd be great fun. All right. My second Judd Wolves thought comes from, I'm stealing this from Jackson Lloyd on X, at Jackson Lloyd NBA. Very simple, but intriguing. The Timberwolves are now 6-3 in the 9 games without Karl Anthony Towns. Mm-hmm. The losses were to the Cavaliers in OT on a back-to-back, to the Lakers without Towns, Gobert, and Slo-Mo, and versus Denver by 3 points on a back-to-back without Towns. But the point is, they are 6-3 without him. I also think that certain guys have gotten more confidence. Like, and we saw last night, you know, Ant had a very Ant game. It was really solid statistically, but it certainly was not an Ant did all the work game. And without Kat, especially Nas, like Nas was feeling it last night, man. His 3 point, he basically stopped the game from becoming a blow up by halftime.
Mm-hmm.
So in no way am I saying it's good that Kat's hurt. I'm also concerned about the fact that he's going to come back from a meniscus in the playoffs. And like, I don't think that you can throw him in his first game back and be like, okay, boy, he's back full strength. But all of that being said, it's even more reason why you want the guys on your bench and a guy like Nas to be set to go. And so I think if I had told you the day it came out, the story broke, that Kat was going to have surgery on his meniscus 9 games in, I said, Phil Mackey, the Wolves are going to be 6-3. I think you would say, oh, okay, that's pretty damn good.
You would 100% take it. Yes. And here's another nugget to add to those 9 games from Dane Moore, our friend, the Dane Moore NBA podcast. Mm-hmm. The Wolves have shot 40 or more threes in 9 different games this season. 4 out of those 9 times where they've shot high volumes of three-pointers have come in the 9 games since Kat has been out, which is kind of crazy because you're taking out one of the great three-point shooters of this generation.
Mm-hmm.
And you're asking yourself, well, how are we going to, we're already like kind of lacking three-point shooters. How are we going to replace that? Well, Chris Finch was asked about the Wolves taking 40 threes again last night and making 21 of them, by the way.
Yes.
And he said, quote, I've always been a big believer that the shooting comes from the spacing.
Yes.
If we space well and we create the right advantages, then we should be able to get to the right shots from the three-point line. Nas has committed to taking 8 threes a game.
This is what you said last week.
That's exactly what I said last week.
This is what you said last week about Kat.
Chris Finch, thank you for listening to the Flagrant House podcast.
Yeah, come on the show.
Excuse me. He said, so guys are committed to taking the three, particularly when it's been created for them, ball movement, spacing, etc. Mm-hmm. We haven't made a conscious decision to say, hey, we need to shoot more threes because Kat's not there. It's a byproduct of our spacing. So, man, there's so much under the hood there. Because on one hand, Kat is your best three-point shooter. On the other hand, he only averages, I don't have the stats in front, I think he averages like 4.5 or 5 threes a game.
Yeah.
And they've been asking for him to shoot even more. It's like, dude, you're like one of the greatest three-point shooters in NBA history, considering your size. Why not shoot 8, 9, or 10? Nas Reed comes in, he's like, okay,
yeah,
sounds good. You want me to shoot some threes? There's no hesitation. How many times last night did he get a pass like in the corner or maybe on the elbow and he wasn't even wide open? You're like, I don't know. And he just, without any hesitation, pulls the trigger and knocks it down.
Yep.
And it's a huge reason why they were able to stay in that game in the first half. And with Kat, we've gone over some of these numbers before, but the Wolves and Kat are really, really good when he is a catch-and-shoot weapon or when he is the roll man on a pick-and-roll going downhill toward the basket, tomahawk, dunk, right, free throw line. Mm-hmm. Where he and they trip up offensively is when he is dribble-driving just in isolation on his own or when he's posting up. And the post-ups, like, if you start to look at, and credit to Howls and Growls on YouTube, did a great video breakdown of this like 3 weeks ago. When Kat posts up, A, the spacing sucks because now you're putting someone who's not as good of a shooter as Kat in a position somewhere else, right?
Right.
And his turnover rate skyrockets. His offensive foul rate skyrockets.
Right.
His assist rate plummets because he's not great at using the post, drawing the double, and finding a teammate. So, like, they've got this unicorn in Karl-Anthony Towns, and one of the best things he could do is just space and sit out in the corner and wait for the ball to come to him.
Which is Nas.
But that's not always, but Kat is such a unicorn too, even more of a unicorn than Nas. He feels like, I need to do this, need to do that. So, boy, how does it look when he comes back? Would he be willing to be more of a spacer than a usage guy in some of these situations? Would that be better for the team? Sounds like the answer is yes.
Oh, I think it absolutely would be. Yeah. Yeah. I think Kat, and it's probably from a place of trying hard. So this is not an indictment of Cat, but I think Cat he tries to do too much at times.
Agreed.
And Nas sits out there, and like Nas just sort of gets it. I also think, and again, this is going to come off as a slight of Cat. I don't mean it that way, but I also think Nas is an incredibly smart player. Like, I think Nas is a really aware player. And you don't go from being a pudgy guy that didn't get drafted, correct?
To now making, he's gonna wind up making like $200 million playing basketball in his life.
But I mean, he has crafted himself. Like, I don't think Nas's success came naturally. I think he has milked every bit. And to do that, you have to be an incredibly smart player. And I think that he is. Okay.
So real quick on the Nas front. So he's averaging, since he stepped in, because Cat got hurt, I think it was the Portland game. So Naz Reid, since the Cleveland game, he's shot 11, 10, and 11 threes. In the last two, he shot eight threes. Cat is averaging 5.3 threes a game.
Mm-hmm.
At a 42% make rate, by the way, which is, that's incredible. That's way above league average.
Oh yeah, his skill. Yep.
So if there is a way for Cat to shoot like 8 to 10 threes a game on average and have the 25 minutes of Nas coming in off the bench, that would be ideal. But it's safe to say that Nas has perfectly stepped into the Cat role pretty seamlessly. But there's still some questions about like the back end depth, like, okay, who are the guys that are filling in for those Nas minutes that are going to the Cat minutes? But they're 6-3 in the 9 games.
Right.
And they've played some tough opponents over that stretch.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Judd's third Wolves talking point. And this one is very simple. And it is to the best player on the team, Anthony Edwards. Dude, the playoffs are just about here. I agree. You do not get the calls that you should consistently. And you probably don't get the respect yet. And I know that frustrates you. But in the playoffs, okay, you need to control your temper. Getting teed up can cost you a playoff game. Like in December, January, that's a bad move, but we move on. But when we're talking the Heat, like if you're playing Golden State in the playoffs, right, and you decide you were fouled, and there, the play last night that he got teed up on, he's probably right. So I'm not even debating him there. I just don't care. He needs to control his anger and his temper. And he does deserve more respect, and that might actually come from shutting up. But I look into the springtime, right, Phil? When the games are close, it's nut cutting time.
Yeah.
And he takes a tee, and let's say he didn't get the basket. Let's say he got fouled, rebound by Golden State, and now he yells, or what's worse is this whole thing of clapping. Official tees him up, and now Golden State gets points from that. Yeah. Can't happen when the games matter the most.
So he is, they flashed this graphic up on the screen last night. He is now, I think, one technical behind Luka Doncic for the most technicals of any player in the league.
I think he's at 13 and Luka and somebody else are at 14.
Yeah, who's the other one?
Or he's tied with a guy at 13, but yes.
Doncic. Oh, Dylan Brooks. He's tied with Dylan Brooks.
Just because Dylan Brooks is probably a different story.
But that's, like, think about that, though. That's, dude, you're tied with Dylan Brooks, who's the biggest douchebag hothead player in the NBA.
Right.
And you're tied with Draymond Green, but you're tied with that guy for technical fouls. So the suspension kicks in with your 16th technical foul. And it ends in the regular season. They reset it for the postseason. Once you get to the postseason, you get a clean slate. And then after the 7th technical foul in the postseason, you get suspended. But he's literally 3 technical fouls away in the last 11 games from a suspension at some point, which I don't think he's going to get there. I think he has enough wherewithal to not like put his team in that spot. But it is frustrating, though, because they showed a couple last night where he clearly gets hacked across the arm. And there's a little bit of a LeBron Shaq factor in Anthony Edwards, where he's such a freight train. It's not like a Ja Morant or some of these smaller players where they go up and the wind blows. There's a wind gust and they they get thrown off their center point. Anthony Edwards, he might get hit across the arm and you wouldn't notice because he just keeps going.
Correct.
So does he have to start over-exaggerating contact, which I hate when players do that, to get to the free throw line? Or can we just, if you're a referee, just do a better job of, hey, when he goes up, if he goes up for a layup and the ball doesn't hit the rim, like, he probably got fouled, which is the assumption they make on a lot of other players.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at the same time, if you're him, like, yeah, you can't pick up, playoff pick wise, up technical fouls.
Like if I'm Finch, I would tell my team every game, I would say, be prepared for the officials to do a terrible job.
Yeah, they're going to screw you on like 10 calls tonight.
Yeah, so just let's deal with it. Let's not react to it. You will get more calls if you just shut up. You will get the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, what you can't have is you lose a crucial game 3 or game 4 and you end up bitching about the officiating. Yeah. We know it's not good. It's very subjective. And you're right on the best example of the play that you're talking about in regards to Ant is that OKC foul where he kept going. I mean, yeah. His arm was slammed, but yeah. Because he kept going, he didn't get a call. And then he went nuts. It's like, okay, dude, I don't want you to change how you play, but you also can't change your mentality or how you feel about things because a group of officials who for the most part aren't great screwed you.
Yep. No, the officials aren't doing a good job officiating him. And they've done a bad job with Carl too. And I think both those guys now have a reputation for any time there's any sort of borderline call, they're going to clap their hands and throw their arms out. And I don't think it's helping their cause.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Before we get to your final two talking points, a shout out to our friends over at Nicolay Law, Judley, the official personal injury law firm of Flagrant Howls. So maybe you were injured in an accident of some kind and the officials screwed you. I don't know. Nicolay Law knows when you or a loved one gets hurt, ordinary life can come to a stop. Things can get complicated. And during that time, insurance companies are likely to pressure you. They don't care if you get better. They don't care if your medical bills are piling up. And that's where Nicolay Law comes in. They've seen every set the insurance companies have to run, every inbounds pass. And they'll go the whole nine yards to make sure that you get the compensation you deserve after an accident. Get Minnesota's local award-winning injury lawyers. That's Nicolay, nicolaylaw.com, or give them a call at 1-855-NICOLAY. Also, a shout out to our friends over at First Equity Mortgage supporting Flagrant Howls here down the stretch. A few years ago, I had an amazing experience with David and the team over at First Equity Mortgage on a refinancing of my home. And First Equity is a Minnesota-based 24 years on the market company, or in the market, I should say, that prides themselves on supporting the community, treating every customer as a friend and as a neighbor. They work fast. They have a great reputation in the Twin Cities, and they also offer programs for veterans and for new home buyers as well, if you qualify. So check them out at femort.com. That's femort.com or scornorth.com. Keyword, David. All right, back to Judd's Wolves thoughts off a thrilling victory last night.
On to thought number 4. So I want to say it was about a month ago or so, we had a show, a Flagrant show, where we talked pretty extensively about the Wolves in crunch time, and it was coming off a loss. And some of the stats basically said that when the pressure gets high, they're not always great. I come to you with this though, after last night, because they started with a Bally Sports North graphic that flashed with the Wolves down after 3 quarters and was then built upon in the 4th quarter. The Wolves went into last night with a 353 winning percentage when trailing after 3 quarters, which, by the way, is really good, and it was the best in the league. Well, guess what?
It's amazing.
It grew last night to 483 because they won again, and the Wolves now have 14 wins when trailing by 10 points or more. That is tied for second most in the league. Mm. Long story short here, I think that you can get some stats to say that there are times where the Wolves could be better in clutch time, but the winning percentage there and being the best in the league when trailing after 3 speaks to a resilience that's absolutely imperative again in the playoffs. And that really impressed me, because that does say, that's a stat that tells me that this team has a resilience to it that is absolutely necessary, because quite frankly, in this league, you're not going to lead every game after 3 quarters. And that, Phil, also speaks to why I think what's changed here is there was a time, no question, where if the Wolves trailed Golden State after 3, it'd be like, okay, I'm going to go watch college basketball.
Yeah.
Now, not only do they come back and win? More impressively, I don't think anyone who has watched this team this season was really shocked by that.
No, that's a wild stat. I saw that when they flashed that too on the broadcast last night, that they are the best team in the NBA when trailing headed into the fourth quarter. Now they've blown some leads too, that they had that really bad stretch from like January into February. And they seem to have clamped some of that down. But, and even like the second unit, man, Monte Morris comes in and he's played in 40 playoff games, whatever it is with the Nuggets. Like that guy comes in with a full steam of confidence. Jordan McLaughlin too has become the Wolves' best 3-point shooter percentage wise. A guy that in the playoffs last year, Denver was leaving him wide open saying, fire away, dude.
And they were right to
duck for cover.
Yep.
And they were right to, and now it's still kind of a small sample size, but he's turned it around to where he was going into last night. He was shooting like 48-49% from 3-point range. So they've got guys coming in. If they have like last night, the second unit, I mean, Anthony Edwards was a -9 and he was really good in some aspects of that game. But when he was on the court, the Wolves were a -9, which means, you know, look where they were to come back and win that game when he wasn't on the court. Do the math on that. So they've just got other guys that can come in. I know Kyle Anderson can be kind of frustrating sometimes because he's completely lost the ability to shoot 3-pointers. You know, he misses these bunnies sometimes in the lane, but he's a great organizer. He understands how to play defense. He understands how to get the ball moving around.
Absolutely.
How to back a guy down in the post.
Nah, last night did some big things. Like the there's a handful of guys last night that didn't have great box scores, but if you watch the game, their importance was huge.
Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who you mentioned, is one of them, where he's flying up and down, back
that
on
pass
defense.
Pass to Conley for the three, though?
Yes.
The fast break?
There was another pass.
Hell of a play.
Did you see the one, Anthony Edwards, he's getting a doctorate in teams double-teaming him, and the Warriors clearly came in last night and said, if Rudy Gobert and or Kyle Anderson are on the court, do not defend them. Now, you can't play a straight-up zone. You got to be a little careful with, like, defensive 3 seconds, but they were blurring those lines. You'd see there was a couple chunks where like Gobert and Kyle Anderson were on the court at the same time and Anthony Edwards, and the Warriors would just like leave both those guys open for a few seconds. And so Anthony Edwards is trying to figure out, they're trapping me and double teaming me every time I touch the ball in the half court. What's my move? And in previous years, he would just try and like split the defense or throw up a bad shot or whatever. Now you can see him trying to process who's the open guy. Where's the help defense? And there was a play, and I can't remember, was it Nikhil in the corner? It might have been Jaden McDaniels. And Anthony Edwards is on the right side of the court, gets double teamed, jumps, like lures the defense a little bit further over, jumps up and fires a skip pass over to the corner for a wide open three. It's like he had like three of those plays where he knows they're doubling him, and he knows the right plays to find the open guy in the corner, on the wing, whatever it is. It's just fun watching him figure out how to make the right play against one of the best teams in the NBA right now, the last month.
And my final thought is this. Again, relating to the playoffs, be prepared. Because in a playoff series, you know, these are not individual games. They're a package of games in which teams approach you with a very set mentality of how they're going to stop you. And to what you just said about Ant, your best players. And Jim Peete mentioned this last night, and it's a very interesting thing. Golden State did this last night. Cleveland did this as well. And that's, they both worked to box out Gobert off the offensive glass. So, and I'm sure Chris Finch is going to be fine. He does not need my advice. But that being said, like when you start a playoff series, you know that Ant is going to be doubled consistently. But teams, if they have the size and strength, and that's an if, but if they have that size and strength, they're going to do everything they can to keep Gobert off the offensive glass on probably a way more consistent basis than we have seen throughout the course of the season. So Gobert is fed off of that, but now it's going to be in a playoff series and you have to be prepared for what your alternatives are or how to free him up. My point is, this is going to start, and this is going to be great to watch, but this is going to start the cat and mouse game, right? The cat and mouse game of what they're doing to certain guys. Carl's return should definitely help. But the Gobert, trying to nullify what Gobert does well, because Gobert is so important here. is, I think, one of the most interesting things, because we probably don't appreciate what Gobert does consistently, but teams are going to try to take that away.
And you're right, like, they did an effective job in some areas. And the reason why the Wolves fell behind early in the game is because they were trying to take advantage of the Warriors were starting Draymond Green at the five. Like, their tallest players were Draymond Green and Kuminga last night. Mm-hmm. And so they played straight up small ball, and the Wolves were trying to get the ball in to Gobert, and it just wasn't happening. And they turned the ball over nine. It was the most infuriating first quarter, because they turned the ball over like 9 or 10 times in the first quarter. And you're like, stop throwing it out of bounds. But at the end of the 48 minutes, mm-hmm. Gobert winds up a +8. The Wolves were a +8 when he was on the court against a small ball, Hall of Famers all over the place, four Hall of Famers, right? And he winds up still with 12 rebounds, 17 points. He still got his, even though they put an effort into stopping him. One more note, too, from last night's game. I don't know if you saw this, but Chris Hine had this from the Star Tribune. Dave Moore had this, that the players in the locker room after the game was over were raving about Mike Anori, the Wolves' lead assistant.
Oh, I did. Yes. This almost made my notes. Yes, I did.
Dude, Mike Anori is regarded as one of the best assistant coaches in the NBA. Will probably get a head coaching job at some point. He's also the most entertaining guy on the, like, halftime interviews.
He's going to make a ton on TV someday. I guarantee it.
So the Warriors had one play, a chance to tie the game at the end, right? And they're running an inbounds pass.
Yep.
And Anthony Edwards said after the game, Mike Anori is a genius, dog. We called timeout. And usually, so you call timeout, and then the players sit for like 30 seconds while the coaches have their own little powwow.
Right.
Micah didn't even go to the coaches' huddle, Anthony Edwards said. He came right to our huddle with the players and was like, okay, this is what they're going to run out of this timeout. This is what the Warriors are going to run, what offensive play they're going to run. Be ready for this. And he drew up the exact play that the Warriors ran on the inbounds pass. And if you watch it back, I think it was Kyle Anderson who wound up getting a hand up in Klay Thompson's face, but they had Klay Thompson blanketed from the minute that play started. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. That's film study. It's tendencies. It's just like to go and say with confidence, this is what they're going to run, and draw it up on the whiteboard and be right. Oof.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. They're going to lose him. But I mean, he deserves a chance. But yeah, that is, but I mean, that again shows, like, this team, that shows where this, it's incredible to say, this franchise is at right now.
Wolves culture, baby.
But I mean, you think about it, that's what I'm saying, though, is how many Minnesota teams have there been where you are like, oh my God, like, this is really professional. This is really good. This is a really good team. Like, they're 6-3 without Cat.
I just thought of a question. Maybe this is for like a full episode at some point. So I'm going to drop a bomb on you, and then we can touch more on later. You get, so last year the Wolves played the Nuggets without Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid, but they had Cat.
Okay.
The last nine games they've been playing without Cat, but they've had Naz Reid and Jaden McDaniels. If I said, okay, you have to pick one or the other for the entire playoffs.
Yeah.
You either get Cat back, but no Naz Reid and no Jaden McDaniels, or you get the opposite. You get Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid, but Cat does not return for the playoffs. Which one would you choose?
It's not hard for me, actually.
You choose Naz.
Two players, and here's why. Cat can win you playoff games. Naz and Jaden and the depth that they also provide can win you series.
Cat can also, as we've seen, fully derail.
That's what I'm saying.
A playoff
game. He can win. Yes. Like, he can make or break a game, but I want guys that positively can impact an entire series. And now, and look, I'll go back to what I said too. I think Naz is a incredibly, incredibly headsy basketball player.
He is.
I mean, that spacing thing, that's not an accident. Like, he's not accidentally like, oh, my spacing is good. I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
That's a concerted effort. And I love I love him saying exactly what you want Carl to say, which is, oh, okay. 8 threes a game. That's
whatever you need, coach. Yep.
But I mean, think about that for a second.
So maybe we can go deeper on that in a future episode.
It's a good question.
We'll see what Kyle says.
Ask Kyle tomorrow. That. Yeah. Kyle's
back tomorrow on the podcast. From Hawaii? Yep, Kyle had a good week. Good week in Hawaii.
He's in Hawaii like once a month.
Kyle pretty much pays taxes in Hawaii.
Nobody goes to Hawaii more than Kyle.
I lived in Seattle for 2 years, and yeah. We went to Maui for a wedding like 6 years ago, and I never made it. It's such an easy jump from the West Coast.
What's the flight? 4 hours?
Like 5 hours. Yeah.
I'm not doing nine from here.
It winds up being like 10 or 11 you start to factor in the layover and stuff.
I can't do that. I'm too old for that.
So anyways, Timberwolves sitting pretty good after last night. And those are your five thoughts from Judd, the OG Wolves guy.
Thanks for letting me do this. That was great. That was
fun. Dude, anytime you want to bring thoughts, you can bring thoughts and I'll react to your thoughts.
Got the notepad, Grady and Jim Pete talking. Oh, and last thing, Bally's, unbelievable team. Those guys are great. I told you, I think before we started, Grady, enjoy him while he's here. That dude is a national talent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right before the Wolves game started, I had Kevin Harlan on my TV, whatever game he was calling. Man.
Great is he now? You know, I will pay Kevin the ultimate compliment. He is a reason to stay tuned to a game that you have no reason to stay tuned to.
If you started introducing weird events that you would never watch, right? Like if it was Kevin Harlan calls obscure Olympic events.
Oh, I'd watch.
I would watch.
I know. I agree.
If it was Kevin Harlan is going to read of romance novel, I would probably consume that show.
Dude is phenomenal.
Yep. So I think you're right about Michael Grady, man. He's super talented and probably gets a national call up at some point. He does some stuff here nationally, but
NBA TV, I think right now,
but like CBS NFL Correct. On CBS or something says, hey, we want you to be our fourth guy behind Correct. Ian Eagle and Jim Nance or whatever. So, all right, that's a wrap on Flagrant Howls here. Please click the like button and the subscribe button on the Score North YouTube channel if you haven't already, and a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple and Spotify. For Judd, I'm Phil. Kyle back tomorrow. Jim Pete back on Thursday. This is a Timberwolves Lifestyle podcast.